Coming up, Cop in the Hood. Peter Moskos, his year policing Baltimore's Eastern District, he's made it into a book. He's a professor at the City University of New York's John Jay College of Criminal Justice, former Baltimore City police officer, and this book is dynamite. 417, I told you earlier I spent much of my morning reading Cop in the Hood by Peter Moskos, who joins us on the phone now. It's about his year policing Baltimore's Eastern District, and Peter's an assistant professor of law, political science, and criminal justice administration at the City University of New York's John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and he joins us now. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Ron. It's great to be on your show.
Your book got me from the beginning.
That's what I like to hear.
It just hooked me. First with a Clint Eastwood quote pertaining to you, because you were a sociology major at Harvard, right?
Yeah, that was a gem of a quote. When I saw the movie again, I was like, wait a second, that's perfect.
What it is, folks, if you don't know, just what I needed is a college boy. What's your degree? Sociology? You'll go far. That is, if you live. Just don't let your college degree get you killed. Clint Eastwood is Harry Callahan in Dirty Harry, 1971. So I was hooked, and then, your comparison with, a cop, that being a professor is a better job, but you miss the other life that you had for, 20 months?
Yeah, I was down there for just under 2 years. I miss part of the job. I miss Baltimore. Mostly, I miss the guys I worked with. But no, it is a better job teaching. I don't have the danger. I make more money, and, I get summers off. So, let me say right off the bat, I think cops need to get paid more, first of all.
Yeah, well, The thing is that this is about East Baltimore, and if anybody is a Wire fan, a fan of The Wire, David Simon's fantastic HBO series, they definitely have to read this book, because it will add to their, the impressions they got from that series. They're going to get the details from your book on what life is like policing East Baltimore.
Only half jokingly, I propose that we call my book "The Wire" Season 6. This time it's real.
Yeah, this time it's real. You undertook, with the cooperation of the existing administration at that time. There was no subterfuge about this. You wanted to write about the policing, but it turned out you had to become a cop in order to do so, right?
Yeah, and that made me not a typical police officer. And that when I went down to Baltimore, it was because they let me do my research, but that was the old
Tom Fraser
administration, mm-hmm. And he was out before I even got down there, and the acting commissioner at the time, I think, just went down and vetoed everything that Fraser approved, because mm-hmm. they didn't like each other, and mm-hmm. I was part of that. I don't even think he knew I was there, but it was day two of the police academy, and I then had a very awkward meeting in the commissioner's office, and I don't really consider him a friend of mine, but he helped me out in the long run, whether he wanted to or not. He said, why don't you become a cop for real?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, who's going to hire me, knowing that I'm going to quit after a year, though I end up staying a bit longer, and write a book about it.
Well, one of the chief things about the book, obviously, is the futility of the war on drugs. Also, the kind of the hopelessness in the ghetto that you described, that you policed, in East Baltimore, where an astounding number of the citizens are either heroin addicts, they're in the trade, they're doing all this kind of stuff. It must have been quite the incredible eye-opener for you once you finished police academy. And they always put the young cops, you say, out there in the worst places.
Yeah, my class was split up. There were 50 of us, and we were split up evenly between the Eastern and Western districts. So, as policing goes, that's putting you right in the thick of things.
It certainly is. And I found it very interesting, the conclusions you drew about the attitudes of your fellow officers. I think that you clear up a lot of misconceptions that people hold instinctively, about police and about police work.
Well, I'm curious what you took out of the book.
What I took out of it was that the cops basically, you make a very big point. This is not a corrupt culture, the police culture.
No, and I was worried about that going in. Going into Baltimore one of the things I hope my book doesn't do is contribute to a negative image of Baltimore and the Eastern District, because, from a cop side, you tend to see the bad, and then even within the Eastern District, there are lots of good people living there. But going to Baltimore and then going to the Eastern District and then going to the midnight shift, I'm thinking, my God, this is, you hear rumors about each one, and yet, it's a good, hard-working police department. I didn't see anything criminal. And I think a lot of the public doesn't realize it. It's not to say that all cops are angels.
No, of course not.
I wasn't either. But it's basically hardworking men and women who
and the contrast between the theory and the reality is of course always one astonishing thing that anybody who's dealing in academic theory, if they get involved in the reality of what they've been studying, it's like it's got to be a tremendous shock, really.
Yeah, well, I think a big problem in academia is that too many professors don't practice what they preach. And, I mean, it's one thing to teach classes in criminal justice, and, I mean, here in New York, I teach a lot of NYPD officers. But it's entirely different than actually, you know, being on the street.
And we want to explore some of these differences, and we want to get your take on the futility of this war on drugs and what you would do instead if you had the power to arrange things, all right? So hang on for me. Peter Moskos, our guest, his book, which will be out later this month, Cop in the Hood. It's published by Princeton. It's really fantastic, believe me. Back talking with Peter Moskos, Harvard sociology major who became a police officer in the course of doing research. It's sort of an inadvertent cop, right?
Yeah, but I'm certainly happy it happened.
This has to tremendously enrich your abilities as a teacher.
Especially because I do teach a lot of police officers, and it, you know, gives me, I mean, along with the knowledge and the experience.
Some credibility.
The street cred in the classroom right away. Well, that helps a lot.
No, exactly so. The Wire, one season was devoted to policing, basically, in the Eastern, in East Baltimore. How, and I know that you've seen all except the most recent season you just told me off the air, how true did The Wire, first of all, what did you think of The Wire, and how did you relate it to your own experiences over those 20 months?
Yeah, well, I loved The Wire, and it was just, I mean, it started filming when I was a police officer. I want to mention the only reason I haven't seen the last season is because I'm waiting for it to come out on DVD so I can binge on it in two or three nights. I think it's about, I love the show, I think it's about 80% realistic, which, you know, it's not 100% realistic, but that being said, it is so much more realistic than any other cop show out there.
You know, one of the interesting things is that people who have a good acquaintanceship with the underbelly of Baltimore have told me that the situation is actually worse than depicted in The Wire.
I don't know if it's a war. I mean, it's not depicted that well in The Wire, most of it. I think it's portrayed by and large, you know, realistically, in the sense that, you know, there, people have gray in them. They're not all good or not all evil. And that's, you know, good people can do bad things and vice versa. And I mean, in that way, the show is just, you know, about real human beings, and that it's nice to see police, by and large, portrayed as real human beings for a change.
Police Academy doesn't have much to do with what later happens, though, does it?
No, and I hope things are better now. I know that I just heard the man in charge of it now, and I have a lot of respect for him, both personally and professionally. But when I went through it, no, and it's really the only thing. I mean, I should warn potential readers. My book isn't a kiss and tell. I mean, there wasn't that much to tell. I mean, it's I'm glad you liked it. It's a description of policing.
You know what it is? It's great reporting. It's really an excellent job of reporting from the inside on something.
Yeah, and the only thing I really slam in it is the Police Academy. I think it was a horrible experience. You're paying police off. I mean, granted, it wasn't a lot of money at the time. My starting salary was $28,400. But you're still paying a full salary for 6 months, and it's just a wasted opportunity. You have police officers, by and large, eager, by and large, you know, with the highest morale they're ever going to have in their 20 years in the department, and most of it squandered. Some of the teachers were excellent. The law teachers were excellent. The shooting instructors were great, as were the driving instructors, but it's everyone's pushed through it. It's not a weed-out process.
Still to come. We're going to talk about what it was like policing the streets, your conclusions about the drug trade and the policing of it, because you've taken your experiences and drawn a larger picture of that futility, and a lot of other things, too. Hang on for me, Peter Moskos, and you're invited to join us, folks, as we continue. 410-467-WBAL, that's our phone number. I'm Talk Show Man with you until 6. The Ron Smith Show continues right now. A news update with Robert Lang. Back talking with Peter Moskos, Harvard-trained sociologist and now an assistant professor at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice at the City University of New York. But for 20 months, a Baltimore City cop, researching this book that has come out, Cop in the Hood. You're politically liberal, right? You
yes.
say that in your book.
It's so rare among cops.
And yeah, I was going to say that that's not the case with most of the cops, black or white, is it?
No. I'd say many of the black cops vote Democratic, but still socially. It's a pretty conservative group.
And you write that most police, both white and black, believe that the social problems in the Eastern District are hopeless. One black officer said, "It's hard not to think this is a jungle here. People running around the street at all hours, getting high, acting like fools. They ought to tear everything down, all of it." A white officer echoed this belief. "I'd like to napalm the whole area. Wouldn't that be beautiful? Just come in with the airstrikes and watch the whole thing go up in flames. I don't know what else you can do. If people want to live this way, I say blank them." What was your view after your experience about this? I mean, policing, obviously, you make it very clear in your book that the policing is just, it's like herding cats. I mean, there's nothing much that can be accomplished by it.
A big part of the job where I worked was, herding junkies, as we said.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, I don't, as an optimist at heart, I don't believe anything's hopeless. But that being said, it's hard to have a lot of hope for a lot of the people growing up in that area. I mean, they come from screwed up families, they get involved in the drug trade early, and it's a culture of violence that just perpetuates. I mean, for me, and what the sort of overarching theme of my book is, I think it all comes down to a failed war on drugs. Simply put, we're not going to win. So we got to figure out, what's the next best thing.
I understand that. But nobody's figured out what the next best thing is. And there's a huge jobs empire in the war on drugs. Billions of dollars are spent each year in the war on drugs. It's a job creation thing, sort of like big city public schools.
Except instead of educating people, we're throwing them in prison. I mean, it is a big industry, but it's not helping the communities that are getting ravaged by drugs.
What would you think would be a change in policies, in approaches that might have a salutary effect on the situation in the ghettos of America?
I can give you a realistic one and my dream answer. I'll give you my dream one first because I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. But I think we got to legalize drugs. And I don't say that because I think they're good, and I don't say that because I want people to take drugs. The problem is now, basically, drugs, it's a free-for-all now.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unregulated drug market. And I don't got the answer for heroin addiction. If you're an addict, there's a good chance you're going to die an addict. I don't know what the answer is, and I don't have it. But what we could stop or at least reduce a whole lot of it, is just the violence around the drug trade. It's not that heroin addicts are shooting people when they're high. It's drug dealers shooting each other. It's
people
involved with drug dealers. It's the selling. It's this unregulated selling. Drugs are just too dangerous for that.
Say you legalize drugs. How would that answer the problem of kids having kids, of the incredible rate of illegitimacy, of the joblessness, of the lack of education, lack of opportunity, because frankly most people don't have any inclination to take advantage of an opportunity if it were even presented to them, nor the ability to take advantage of it? Well, I mean, in other words, what would it accomplish? It would cut down on the shootings, but what else would it do?
Well, I mean, if you prevent 250 people, a year from getting murdered in Baltimore, that to me is, you don't need to do anything else. That's a victory. Not to mention, another 200 drug overdose deaths. That could all be prevented as well. But what I hope
But toward what end?
Well, what I hope it would do is start to change the culture. I think it is not that. I think a lot of this is thug life and the thug culture. A lot of that comes from the money involved in the drug trade. And if you take that out of the culture, and if you change it from an illegal to a legal job, in the same way, bar owners are legal and by and large not shooting each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think then you would start to have. It would be nice if people with legitimate legal tax paying jobs could actually be role models instead of the idiot on the corner.
Yeah, You make the point that there's not as much money being made in the lower levels of drug dealing, though, as has been popularly thought.
No, I mean, all you have to do is drive around the Eastern District to see that, it's not suffering from too much money. By and large, someone is getting a lot of money.
The police can't do anything about.
Yeah, but it's the guy standing on the corner probably isn't making a lot of money. Often, it's less than minimum wage, and you've got a good chance at getting murdered. But it's still, you know, some money is better than no money. So people do it. There's an issue of, you know, respect, and it's cool. And
one of the interesting things in your book is that a lot of the police officers defend the idea of just locking up junkies time after time because, you know, that's what they can do. That's what they're there to do.
Well, that's what also, I mean, it's police, you know, we've all been taught by the propaganda of the war on drugs, and it's, so police, you know, that is what police do, is ultimately police lock people up. The idea is, you know, they're not going to get off drugs until they've hit rock bottom, and, you know, police might help them hit rock bottom. But, I mean, clearly it's not working. I mean, if we haven't won the war on drugs by now, you know, what another 5 years and suddenly we're going to win it?
You're preaching to the choir on that one, believe me, Peter. it's a massive exercise in futility because the demand is there.
Yeah, people want to get high.
They want to get high, and as long as the demand is there of everyone from, you know, the drug barons in Colombia to the poppy growers to, you know, the marijuana growers to the people who smuggle it, to the people who wholesale it, to the people who sell it, you can get them occasionally, but they're instantly replaced because there's a lot of money to be made.
Yeah, there's an economic need. And you see that on the corner. You can lock up, I mean, in a drug shop, I mean, as it's called, you know, the cardinal rule is you got to keep the drugs and the money separate. So whoever is running the actual corner, and he's you know, and he's not really a high-level kingpin either, but he doesn't have any drugs on him. So it'll be some, you know, 15-year-old kid who's the slinger, who's actually giving out the drugs.
And as Prop Joe pointed out in The Wire, any fool can make money selling drugs in Baltimore. The trick is cleaning the money, laundering it. That's the real trick. We're going to take some phone calls as we continue, okay?
Great.
Peter Moskos with us. His book, Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District, 410-467-WBAL, the phone number. Talking with Peter Moskos about his book, soon to be out. It's called Cop in the Hood, My Year Policing Baltimore's Eastern District. One of the interesting things, Peter, is you talk about getting street cred, you know, in your current job teaching cops. But you said you got some grief from fellow academics about the fact that you actually were a police officer for a time.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that I got more grief from my Harvard profs about being a Baltimore cop than I did for most Baltimore cops about being a Harvard grad student.
Why?
Well, in their defense, partly I pulled a bait and switch on them because it wasn't my original plan. So I thought maybe they, you know, they thought I was trying to pull a quick one over their eyes. But some of it, I think, is just old-fashioned class snobbery. I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe they thought I was too good for that or something. And God knows I'm not.
But isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I mean, so much for liberal tolerance.
And so much for actually researching things thoroughly.
Well, you know, it wasn't the original plan, and you know, I did, my research did end up being more like, as you mentioned, you know, an investigative reporter to some extent. And, you know, that's not the way you're supposed to do things. But, I mean, now that the book's out, everyone's happy with it, so,
You know. You know, one of the things is the, you point out that street-level busts have just almost no impact on the overall drug trade, and yet that's what the police, are tasked with doing, and that's what they do, day after day.
I mean, short of...
But what is... you make it clear there aren't really any alternatives to it right now.
Well, I mean, short of regulating the drug trade, and doesn't that sound better than legalizing drugs? But that's what I want to do, is regulate them. But short of that, because I know that's not going to happen anytime soon. Pushing drug dealers indoors. You know, there are millions of Americans who buy and use and enjoy marijuana every day. And by and large, they do it peacefully because they buy it from their friends and families and coworkers, like you're supposed to. It's that public drug dealer, the guy on the corner, that's creating all the violence and the problems.
And as you point out, the risk of death is astoundingly high, but I guess that's just accepted, isn't it? Maybe as high as 7% annually for some of those in the game, as you said?
Another professor who got his hands on the actual financial books of a gang in Chicago, Venkatesh is his name, he wrote a good book called A Gang Leader for a Day. He pointed out that number during a drug war. The number that I point out, and I hope someone proves me wrong, I don't have complete confidence in it, but so far no one has, which is if you're born a man in the Eastern District, which means a black man, there's over a 10% chance you're going to get murdered in your lifetime. And that doesn't take out all the people who aren't in the game. I mean, you know, there are lots of people who are, you know, going to school and get a job and live a normal life. They're not getting murdered by and large.
Well, we have on the phone with us Howard, who was a police academy instructor. Howard, you're on with Peter Moskos. Go ahead.
Peter, got a question for you.
Yes.
You said that there were some bad things in the academy that is, you know, weren't necessary to be taught. Exactly what were they? Maybe the higher-ups need to know this.
Yeah, but, well, it's interesting because at the time I even offered some suggestions when I was in there. At the time, no one cared. I do think things are better because I know that the major now, you know, he was a sergeant, I think, back when I was in the academy, and he's a good man. I think what has to be, first of all, people have to care a bit. There was so much just slack time where we're sitting around doing nothing. Too much time marching in military formation. You know, having shine shoes is important, but they're more, it's not, they don't teach you how to police. You shouldn't be isolated from the officers on the street who, at the time, were seen as a corrupting influence. I mean, at some point, all the officers in the academy are going to be on the street. So I think you got to sort of blend that together a little bit. And then, you know, teach kids about the history of Baltimore a bit, about race relations in the city. Because there are a lot of, I mean, through no fault of their own, but there are a lot of very ignorant trainees coming into the city who don't know about race relations and don't understand why anybody might not like the police. These are things that you should get up, you know, you should get, be introduced to in the academy, along with the, I think the practical skills, by and large, were taught pretty well. But it's everything else that I had a problem with.
When did you go through the academy?
I was in the class of 99-5.
99-5?
Yeah.
Yeah, you came in right as I was leaving.
What did you teach, Howard?
I taught EBOC driving. I taught report writing.
Uh-huh. Well,
and I ended up in the Eastern District again.
Is that right? Are you retired now?
No, soon to be, I hope.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us.
Okay.
I appreciate it. You have an interesting quote from Professor Carl Clockers. It makes about as much sense to have police patrol routinely in cars to fight crime as it does to have firemen patrol routinely in fire trucks to fight fire. That 911 is a joke is the title of the chapter that quote heads. And, you know, I've always thought that beat policing is the best kind of policing, but there are a lot of powerful reasons why it is no longer in vogue.
What are those I don't know what those powerful reasons are.
There's well, for one thing, you talk about some of them. Cops would much rather be in a car.
Yeah, but cops also do what they're told. And you know what you could do? Here's my way to get cops walking. I mean, I was no exception, by the way. I walked around, you know, blocks a few times at 4 a.m., but that was more to get exercise and lose my belly than it was to actually do preventative policing. But nevertheless, I was out there walking around for whatever my motivations were. The problem is foot patrol is used as punishment. So even if you want to, even if you're a rare officer that likes walking around, you don't want to do it because people will wonder.
It's low status.
Yeah, and there's a simple way to get cops to walk the beat.
But you make the point that it's the beat cop walking the beat that actually serves as a crime preventive, whereas a patrol, you know, by car, is not a crime preventive.
Yeah, someone calling 911 to tell me there was drug dealing at Wolf and Eager, though I guess all that's been torn down now for Hopkins. But, yeah, I know there was drug dealing at Wolf and Eager. There was, you know, there was yesterday and there will be tomorrow.
Yeah, and you point out that it goes on all the time and that you only know of one instance during your time there where for a few hours it wasn't available.
And it was just for a few hours, and that was because, yeah, we arrested a bunch of people.
And then the FBI.
And the FBI independently had their own little sting. Yeah, it's just, 911 is by definition meant to be reactive, so you're picking up the pieces a lot of times.
Let me get Dan on because he's been waiting a long time. Dan, you're on. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello, Peter.
Yeah, hey, Dan.
Yeah, listen, I just wanted to ask your time in the police department. What is your opinion or your observations about the increased politicalization of the police department, and what effect did that have on the police department as a whole?
And we have a minute.
Well, I mean, like any cop, I'm against getting, you know, politics too involved in the police department. That being said, you know, police department is a civilian organization, and at some level they should be responsible to democratically elected people, you know, like the mayor. The big problem I saw was, I mean, we went through so many commissioners when I was there, and every time the commissioner goes, so do his top four or five or ten men and women. And that constantly lopping off the top of the police department is just, you're losing knowledge, you're losing experience. I mean, experience I never had, but you got to keep those people in a longer because they're the ones who know what they're doing usually.
And this latest change, by the way, Peter, you're aware of it. Fred Bielfeld was named police commissioner, and that was up from the ranks, and he seems like a really good choice, so they didn't do the same thing that they've been doing.
Yeah, I think that was a wise choice. I mean, I don't know him personally, but I know he has a lot of respect among the rank and file. And
Dan,
you know,
thank you.
I read what he says in the paper, and so far I approve.
Thank you, Dan, for joining us. And Peter, we're going to have you back on because your book is actually coming out in late May or early June, right?
Yep.
Okay, so when it comes out, we'll have you back on and we'll talk some more, all right?
Great, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. The book is Cop in the Hood. Get it when it comes out. It's really terrific.